Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Don't miss songs and stories from Bartholomew Town, Saturday, June 24th at the Pump House in South County. So today we have a discussion with a couple of board members from the Young Democrats here in Rhode Island. Thanks so much, each of you, for making the time. You know, there's so many things that we could get into, so many different perspectives, and we kind of have an idea of where we're going to go today. But as always is the case here on Bartholomew Town, who knows which tributaries we may wind up on. We're joined by Mary Murphy Walsh, who's an elected organizer with SEIU 1199, one of the largest unions in the state, and Anthony Cherry, the Assistant Executive Director at Build RI. Both of you are board members of the Young Dems.
Hi, thank you.
Again, a pleasure. Good morning. So I guess before we, you know, dig into issues, talk about what the Young Dems of Rhode Island are and why you were established.
I think I can lead off first. Bill, thank you so much for having us today. The Young Dems has been an organization that has various formations over the past 20 years. The latest dove off after COVID, and so we saw an opportunity to rejuvenate this organization, bring in some eager and young talent into the board, and kind of have a place where young folks, 35 and under, can talk about democratic policies, engage in the political process, and give them kind of an area to do that. And we'll kind of talk about today about what our objectives are, from legislation to mobilizing to organizing. But the idea was to create a space that we can, as a community, talk about issues and have a real conversation.
Mary, from your standpoint, how important is it to engage young people? I mean, that's a very generic question, but oftentimes we talk about engaging younger folks in politics. From the standpoint of union organizing, from the standpoint of specific legislation, why is it important for people to dig in?
Well, I think it's not just important. If we're gonna have, you know, the society that as an organization we envision and aspire to, we have to do this now more than ever. Obviously, you know, in the union with the workers I represent, our last 3 years as healthcare workers were absolutely devastating. And more, you know, as is always the case in labor, but given our current situation, there are people, whether, you know, it's at work or at the state house, or, you know, if you're a young person at school, making decisions about us. And if, as, you know, whether we're a group of workers or students or, you know, parents, if we do not have a seat at the table, we're on the menu. And I think that if you don't start at a young age, I see this with members all the time, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, you know, having the ability to make a decision about who's going to make these decisions for them, not having ever practiced that, having to really work with them to get to that point. So I think as young Dems, we can do the work on the front end, setting ourselves up for success and teaching that that important value.
There's some legislation that you want to move this year, and that would allow 16 and 17-year-olds to be able to vote in their school board elections. Look, right now, there's this culture war that is just, it frankly is going to play a major role in our presidential election this year. We see Ron DeSantis with, you know, some of the maneuvers that he's made. But here in Rhode Island, there are folks who are seemingly dedicated to imparting their views on exactly what should and shouldn't be taught in schools. Oftentimes, those folks end up on school boards. And this actually comes from both the left and the right. Why is it important to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to be able to vote in their school board elections?
If I could,
with the fundamentals of why we think this is important, it's about building habits. And I'll use a line from Secretary Amore, who testified on this bill in support of it. Rhode Island can be the incubator for democracy. We have the ability to test things and experiment with ideas and how to encourage civic engagement. And we view this bill as a way to do that. Studies have shown that the sooner you get involved with actively voting, I'm talking consistently voting year in and year out, or election year now, you will become a form of solid habit. And we want to create that habit. And it's not just about party line. It is about voter participation in our elections. Once we have that, we have a more vibrant, diverse, communicative democracy. And that's what we're trying to create here. We want to give young folks more time to talk about these issues. Wouldn't it be a great idea for 16, 17-year-olds to have a conversation in history class about, hey, I'm going to go vote on Tuesday. Have you thought about this? Have you decided who you're going to vote for school board? And then it genesis off to other conversations that are taking place. So we think it's a great idea, just at the fundamentals, to increase voter democracy. Voter participation in democracy. And I think that's the crux and the purpose of this legislation. But as Murph is going to talk about shortly, there is a real world purpose for this. And I think that is ultimately the motivation factor for getting this legislation finalized and through the finish line, because we are, but it's coming out today. This is Friday, so it's coming out this afternoon. So that means we got 2 weeks left of session, and then that's it. So we want to make sure this thing has its day on the House and Senate floor to be voted on. So I will turn it over to Murph to
Your point, Bill, if I may, you know, there is a national urgency to increase voter participation in young people. Now, right now, the voter participation rate of voters, eligible voters between 18 and 29 is around a low 27%. But where we've seen this legislation passed in places, including Maryland, we're talking about 16 and 17 year olds voting in their own local school committees. Of the 54% of people who voted that were eligible, that was the rate in which they were voting. I think it was 69% of them were actually 16 and 17 year olds, when you play that out, when those voters become 18, that they increase that percentage in which they are voting, because as Anthony talked about, the habit has been formed.
Absolutely. So right now we're facing, as I alluded to, significant efforts. And I don't know if significant's the right word, because maybe it is. But anyway, there's these folks that are, you know, their whole thing is whether it's outing LGBTQAI+ students, whether it's banning books, critical race theory, calling people groomers. I mean, everybody knows who these people are. And it's a small group of people, many of whom are vocal, some of whom don't even have kids in the school districts. But it's an attack on schools. Again, I mean, look, we have seen folks on the left also impart their views in schools. No question about it.
Yep.
And if you're going to be fair about things, you can't say, well, that's okay, but it's not okay for a right-wing view to be imparted. I think that's my standpoint as well, no matter. But at the same time, we've seen some of the actions taken by some of these alt-right groups, even here in Rhode Island. You got this Parents United. There's others as well. Yep. These are attacks on schools. Why is it important right now for students, Gen Z, to be able to enact their own vote in determining who is in charge of their schools?
Well, if, if I could, I would say, why is it important? I would start with because they can, they are able to, they are, you know, mature enough. They clearly have, they are stakeholders in the decisions that are being made. And so you're right. We can't say, you know, it's okay for one group and not the other to dominate. But the difference here is the ability to have say in who, again, is sitting at that table. And so if these 16 and 17 year olds, you know, with the data that we see about what these policies play out in terms of impact on students' lives, we have 40% of our homeless population in Rhode Island is LGBTQ youth. We have 40% of LGBTQ youth nationally committing suicide. We have here in Rhode Island active, desperate group of students in Smithfield and in other places demanding to have their voice heard. And this legislation must be passed so that their voice is legitimized and so that they can have, you know, their rightful self-determination over their safety in their school. I can say as a gay woman, when I was 15, 16, 17, my choice to come out is still the choice I make every day, depending on my safety. And I feel no different. Nothing has grown about my choice. It was the same in high school when I did not come out to many of my friends or my family for the same reasons that, you know, students today should be protected from having to do.
No question about it. I mean, it's absolutely horrific. And we see this Smithfield situation where, you know, they want to create what is really an outing policy. Essentially, it would mandate that if a student were to say that they are presenting as transgender or anything that is basically other than cis,
yep,
that the responsibility of the school would be to turn them over to their parents. And it's such a tin ear, destructive type of approach. Frankly, Gen Z, young millennials, I think most thinking people realize that this is a horrific idea. At the same time, you've got zealots in the media, you've got zealots in some of these organizations, and elected officials who think this is a wonderful idea. Explain why you believe, as I do, that this is a horrific idea and the danger that something like this Smithfield policy would create should it be enacted.
Again, you know, I turn to some of the statistics I just outlined. When you feel unsafe, whether it's because you are a student who is scared of gun violence, or you are a student who is scared of not knowing where they're going to live after school, or if you are scared that you are going to be the subject of discrimination, harassment, you know, conflict with your parents, all of those things happen when you are outed against your will. And you also start losing in a way that impacts you long term. We're talking about these positive outcomes, this identity building exercise of being able to engage in electoral politics. When you, the opposite of that results in learned helplessness. It in a time where, you know, you're 16, you're 17, you're really starting to figure out who you are and who you can be. And when you're under attack and actively silenced, that impacts your identity formation. And, you know, our schools are supposed to be uplifting our students. Every single student in Rhode Island deserves to be supported, not oppressed, as they go into adulthood.
Completely.
And I think to comment on a previous point you made, too, about banning books, I think that's just the next step, too, in this kind of slippery slope. I mean, we're talking about Rhode Island here, a deep blue Democratic state. It's going on elsewhere, too, Chicago, another a liberal bastion for us. But banning books is a slippery slope, and I think it goes towards this overall discussion that's happening in Smithfield, where we want to have a different, like a forced, or not forced, but encourage young folks to read about different things that might force a conversation by shielding and protecting youth from quote unquote dangerous literature. I think that sets a bad precedent to kind of curbing and kind of grooming overall about a certain point of view. And I think that's where you get down the line of a narrow blinders kind of point of view that leads into this conversation of cis has to be it and nothing else. I think that's a real dangerous thing. So we want to, while it might not be comfortable for you to read it, but it's uncomfortable. It forces a conversation to be had. So just wanted to comment on that and what we see as the next line, because this is just Smithfield. It could happen elsewhere too. So
absolutely. And we are seeing it elsewhere, and we're seeing at least the seeds planted. So I would ask each of you your message to anybody out there that says, you know, it's always been the way things have always been. And it, obviously this isn't even true because it's been an evolving situation, but you know, giving 16 and 17 year olds the right to vote, you know, the next thing they're going to be asking for is 14 and 15 year olds. And suddenly we're going to have 5 year olds voting. What do you say to these people?
No,
because they're obviously out there.
Yeah. It is a question of trust. Right. Any rational person would say that, you know, we're not trusting the 5-year-olds. The research does demonstrate that 16-year-olds that is the age where they are mature enough, developed enough to be making these decisions. And we demonstrate that as a society in every other choice we avail them of. The decision of, do they want to, you know, commit to one day serving our country? Do they want to commit to which career would they like to commit to, which field of study, how to participate, you know, in our community, how to drive on our roads. We this is the age where we trust young people to not only participate, but we start giving them responsibilities in our society. And to have that be their role without a voice is unconstitutional. If you want to have a debate about it. They have the ability, and they are being impacted, so therefore they should have the right.
Yeah, I'm inclined to. I mean, I'm not inclined. I totally agree, and I think that, you know, you can find. Believe me, you can find 50, 60-year-olds who have way less of a command of who and what they're voting for than 14. 12-year-olds,
right.
Even, no
right.
question about it.
And again, this is not, we're not talking about giving them the full right to you know, local and national elections. We're talking about the controlled environment in which they're living. School, high school, or, you know, you walk into those halls, that's kind of your world. And it's who you become at the end of that period is really determinative of who you will be when your world expands. So this is an exercise in helping young people practice such a necessary way of engaging in our community.
Last couple of minutes here, and I should note that we are recording on Friday. This will actually air on Monday of next week. So timeline is about the same in terms of the sprint to the finish line for the General Assembly. What are the next steps here for this to actually come to fruition?
So next steps, the bills, and I can get kind of give you the bills outlined there. It's 5959 by Rep. Ackerman, a deputy leader, and then 638 by Chairwoman DeMario in the Senate. They've been heard. We gave good testimony on both of them. Now it's that they've been held for the study. And now it's just urging the chairs of the committees to put them forth for a committee vote. And then from a committee vote, we'll go to the respective chambers. I've been doing this bill now, lobbying and political activism for the past 10 years. And it comes down to the last 48 hours.
That's
so
right.
We have plenty of time to kind of move things and advocate. But as it's classic, call your rep, call your senator, ask for them to advocate for this bill to be pushed. This is our main priority this year. We don't have any other legislation that we're pushing, and we're not focused on any other races. We're focusing on an expansion of voting rights, and that is the main thing. We're trying to build the bench for Democratic politics going forward, and that's our mission. And so we want to encourage more voter participation.
If I could just plug, you know, again, the urgency, this is a great idea. It is proven to yield positive outcomes for our democracy and our civic engagement. But right now it's a necessity given what's happening within the borders of our state. And so I would urge, you know, anyone who is listening, who thinks what's happening in Smithfield is wrong and would like to help the students who are fighting for their rights, they are fighting and they deserve to have that fight legitimized. Please call your rep or senator and encourage them to pass this.
Anthony Cherry, Mary Murphy Walsh, young Democrats, board members. Hey, thanks so much for your time. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Cool. Appreciate it.
We are brought to you in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who are offering a cannabis certificate program. The legalization of recreational cannabis that went into effect last year can open doors for your career. If you are already in the industry or wondering what the best path to break into the cannabis field is, well, the University of Rhode Island has a program to help you become highly competitive in numerous areas of the cannabis industry. Fully accredited by URI's College of Pharmacy, the certificate program is 100% online and can be completed in just 2 semesters. Learn more at uri.edu/online/cannabis or give them a call at 401-874-5280. We're brought to you in part by CCA Health Rhode Island. Commonwealth Care Alliance, or CCA, is a multi-state integrated care system influencing innovative models of complex care nationwide. CCA's uncommon care model focuses on sustainable and evidence-based healthcare breakthroughs that improve the health and well-being of people with significant needs, and is consistently recognized as one of the best models in the country at identifying and serving traditionally hard-to-reach individuals. CCA is excited to bring uncommon care to Rhode Islanders with a range of Medicare Advantage plans. Learn more by visiting CommonwealthCareAlliance.org/Rhode Island.